Thank you, everyone, coming back so promptly. Now, in our whirlwind tour of ethics, which I think is tremendous, because to have all the ethical system at all, the majority of them, compared like this, I think is so useful. We're going to have Brenda Johnson, who was runner-up in this year's Chadwick Prize, or last year's, talk to us about virtue ethics. Brenda.
Thank you very much. Alistair McIntyre, in his book After Virtue, poses the question, Nietzsche or Aristotle? And in doing so, asks us to reconsider an ethics which the failed Enlightenment project of secular rationalism rejected. For if we cannot justify universally applicable ethical rules in the face of Nietzsche's perspectivism and the emotivism of his successors, we must ask whether the Aristotelian intellectual tradition should have been discarded in the first place. McIntyre writes, but which ought we to choose? And how ought we to choose? It is yet another of Nietzsche's merits that he joins to his critique of Enlightenment moralities, a sense of their failure to address adequately, let alone to answer the question, what sort of person am I to become? This is, in a way, an inescapable question, in that an answer to it is given in practice in each human life. Well, I agree with McIntyre that instead of seeing virtue as that which disposes one to obey particular moral rules, we need to give priority to excellences of character in the making of ethical rules. We need to ask, how would a virtuous person, a virtuous community, a virtuous country behave in a particular set of circumstances? What sort of person am I to become is the central issue for virtue ethics. I'm going to take a neo-Aristotelian approach in this presentation. That is, I will focus on Aristotle's function argument that the virtues are excellences of character which constitute the well-being of individuals and their communities. But I'm going to look at it and interpret it in a contemporary light. Our question today is, why should we be good? I'm going to argue that being good, that is, exercising characteristics such as honesty, kindness, temperance, and justice, gladly, that's very important, it's not going to be a compulsion, to be virtuous is to be to love virtue and to be virtuous in a gladsome way. And with practical wisdom, that is also very important, but wisdom and using reason in the exercise of courage, generosity, etc. That these virtues benefit us and those we associate with. So that's the answer to our question, why should we be good? It's because it's for our own benefit, which seems a pretty good reason to me. But first of all, I'm going to summarize the main points of Aristotle's argument itself. Then I'll try to answer some objections to it, and then this will lead into your questions. The argument, I'm going to interpret this argument, but you might wish to disagree with my interpretation. It's found in the Nicomachean Ethics. So this is how I see it. Observation shows that humans, like other species, have a specific nature which strives towards specific goals. The characteristic which is unique to the human animal is the rational element in action. And human action, characteristically, aims at something either instrumental to something else. So in order to be here, I had to get the train from the north, or as an end in itself, and the greatest end in itself is what Aristotle calls eudaimonia, which is well-being. It's not easy to translate that term, but it's more or less flourishing or well-being. Some people say it's happiness, but that doesn't quite fit it. It's more of a rounded life, a life well-lived. And perhaps can't really recognize eudaimonia until the end of your life, when you can see that you have lived or not lived well as a human, qua human. So to use an analogy, a good knife cuts well, that is, they serve their proper function. Good humans reason well in their activities towards being and doing well. And personal well-being is bound up with the well-being of those we associate with, because we are by nature social animals. To flourish is to flourish within a flourishing community. That's how I would see it. But these excellences of human character are the virtues. They are the constitutive elements of well-being, of self and community. We could say that a person who lives a virtuous life is a virtuoso at life. Morality and nature are part and parcel of the same thing. And that's one way of looking at it. You might disagree with that. On the other hand, virtue does not come naturally at birth. Humans must be schooled in virtue, which makes me wonder who decides what the virtues are. I remember when I was reading Hearst House in this, I was reminded of my Sunday school when I was a child, and she sounded very much like my Sunday school teacher. But of course, a lot of Christianity took on board Aristotle's views. But this presentation is entirely secular, and I think what Aristotle means by the virtues is that experience of living as part of a community actually shows us what they are. It's by living in a community and mixing with others and having friends and all of that actually shows you what the virtues are. You have to live it to know it. That's how I see what he's saying, really. Because he was talking about a city-state, a polis, where probably people did know each other very well. I would say that if you don't see yourself as a team player, it's very difficult to be virtuous. However, suppose you are a bit of a loner and want to know what's the right thing to do in a specific situation. I was looking at Rosalind Hursthouse's book on virtue ethics, and she comes up with this reasoning. The first premise is an action is right if and only if it is what a virtuous agent would characteristically do in circumstances. Well, it's intelligent, is it? 1A, a virtuous agent is one who has and exercises certain character traits, namely the virtues. Premise 2, a virtue is a character trait that is on the following list. And then I would see it that you would make the list depending on your particular community, what works in that community. What Aristotle would have on his list might be quite different from what we have on our list. Although I don't think it's radically different, but again, that's a matter of debate. Now I'm going to look at some objections. So, 4 objections, and I'm going to try and reply to those. You may have more objections. I hope you do. Firstly, the virtue ethics is agent-centred rather than act-centred. So there seems to be little guidance for doing the right thing. It all falls back on me. I can't look at a procedural rule or the logical necessity of Kant, or the consequential likelihood of certain events. It comes back to my character. So how can we really know how to act? How can we be good with that kind of hazy Hades. Or to exercise virtue is to make a rational judgment according to a mean, and thereby do the right thing for the right reasons, at the right time, in the right circumstances. Apart from the laws of the land, which ideally would reflect a virtuous community anyway, there are no rules as such to refer to. Too much courage, for example, could be rashness in certain circumstances. But the virtuous agent always uses the intellectual virtue of judging wisely. So to say, be courageous as a procedural rule is not enough. The intellect which has been trained to be wise must always accompany the habit of virtue. Desire and reason work together to make sensitive decisions, and perhaps well-tuned virtue can only come with maturity. And if one were lucky enough to have been brought up and educated in a virtuous community, there would be role models to refer to. I think it's also true that ethics is not cut and dried. For example, the virtue of honesty might require me to tell my friend bad news about her situation, but kindness might prohibit such disclosures at this particular time. She may be ill or otherwise upset. It would be a matter of my judgment based on all the known factors which will determine how and when I tell her. My desire would be to act in the best interests of all concerned. Also, making the right decision to tell her the truth now, for example, because to keep it from her would be no kindness, may leave a bad taste in the mouth, because the decision is the best of a bad job given the situation. One may be virtuous, yet regret having to do something. Rosalind Hursthouse, in her book on virtue ethics, writes, "Utilitarianism and deontology are act-centered, whereby when their proponents consider hard-case dilemmas, they concentrate exclusively on the question, which is the right act, X or Y? And since one cannot decide to feel regret, and feeling regret is not an act in the required sense, they thereby cut themselves off from thinking of bringing in that sort of remainder. A proponent of virtue ethics, concentrating on the question, what would a virtuous agent do in this situation, if given the concentration on the agent and the wider scope of do, all set up to answer X after much hesitation and consideration of possible alternatives, feeling deep regret, and doing such and such by way of restitution." I think this makes a lot of sense. I think the flexible and holistic approach of virtue ethics is a more realistic way to try to understand the problems and make difficult decisions that we all have to face. Its agent-centeredness also emphasizes personal responsibility. One may show virtue while doing something wrong. An example of this might be the courage of the long-suffering battered wife who finally murders her husband and then confesses. She shows courage in acting, bearing in mind the history of the relationship, and also courage in admitting it, knowing the consequences. Arguably, she might also act for the right reasons at the right time in the right place, etc. But how can any of this be ethical if it results in such a manifestly wrong act? Philippa Foot in Virtues and Vices suggests that a virtue could be construed as the power to produce good actions and good desires, but which does not always act characteristically. She gives the analogy of arsenic, which does not always act as a poison wherever it is found. So my example of the battered wife is not using her courage as a virtue when she murders her husband. I would also say that had she done nothing and continued to suffer, her temperance would not be acting as a virtue. Another way of looking at this is to say that she was not wise in either the murder or the continuing to suffer. Wisdom always leads to good action, that is, it always operates as a virtue. Another objection is that, intuitively, contrary to Aristotle, do we not think that the virtuous person who loves and desires virtue, that is fully virtuous, is less morally worthy than he who has to struggle against inclination to do the right thing, that is merely continent? Virtue is as much about feelings as about reasoned action. The two work in harmony. Why should that be better than the Kantian idea that he who acts out of a sense of duty alone draws on the highest moral worth of character? Both Herzog and Foote argue that Aristotle should be interpreted according to the circumstances. The father who jumps unhesitatingly into the river to save his drowning child seems more worthy than he who tries to summon up courage on the riverbank before eventually wading in. The swift reaction reflects values and character. However, the person who suffers from claustrophobia, for example, will have to call upon more courage when stuck in a lift than he who does not have claustrophobia. If he handles himself well, he seems more virtuous than the one who is habitually courageous. Also, supposing that a person is suffering from a recent bereavement and a friend needs a listening ear, it will be hard for the person to put her sadness aside, but that does not mean she lacks full virtue. Her difficulty comes from her sadness, not from her character. And lastly, Aristotle's lectures were concerning the conduct of active citizens in the Athenian city-state. What relevance has this to the way we live now? We may no longer live in communities whose members share the same idea of what the good life is, and even if we do, why does that consensus make it good? McIntyre doubts that virtue ethics is possible without the shared values and accountability found in communities, and modernity militates against such communities. Jonathan Lear addresses this issue in his article, Can the Virtuous Person Exist in the Modern World? This was in the London Review of Books. Against McIntyre, he argues that small communities who agree on the common good often harbour prejudice towards outsiders, and that contemporary life has often helped to dismantle such barriers. While McIntyre thinks we need to imagine other points of view, Lear goes further and proposes that we extend Aristotelianism beyond its application to particular communities towards human nature as such. The virtue ethics approach should be viable in differing cultural traditions and political structures. My view is that whenever we associate with others as a group with a common purpose, we need to exercise virtue in order for the group to flourish, and that most of us associate with groups of one sort or another most of the time. Friendship was very important for Aristotle, and I think it is hard to maintain friendship without virtuous behaviour. Appropriate, willing kindness, not naive or grudging, shows integrity and sense of self as well as the need of friends. This holistic sense of what is good is what friendship is, and I would argue that human nature seeks friendship and community. So to answer our question, why should we be good? We should be good, that is, virtuous, because our being virtuous benefits us. There are no guarantees, but given the uncertainty of ethics generally, being virtuous usually contributes to human well-being, and as some virtue ethicists argue, may even constitute human well-being. Is this true? Well, if you are virtuous and desire virtue for its own sake, it is bound to be true, because your concept of well-being just is life, lived in accordance with the virtues. Thank you.
Yes.
Is it a possible difficulty for virtue ethics that it puts a premium on cleverness? You have to be bright enough to know what rational thing to do is, you have to be right up to spot what the appropriate virtue is for your community at your particular time. And it does seem to be it's not quite as good as some account of virtue, some account of morality, which allows the unbright as good a chance as the bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a fair comment. I think Aristotle is perhaps one of the elitists. But I think the point is that virtue needs to be taught from an early age. I think that's clear. It needs to become a habit through teaching. It's not, I don't think people are born with it at all. Unfortunately, those who are not lucky enough to have that opportunity perhaps wouldn't be virtuous. The point is, though, that if we were to adopt an Aristotelian view of ethics, is that we'd make sure children were taught in this way.
I'm quite a fan of everything you're saying. The aspect of virtue theory that I think bothers me most, which you did address, it is its conservatism. The fact that if you ask where the virtues are coming from, I think your initial story is you're reading them off from within your community, and you have to sort of adjust your community. Towards the end, you sort of addressed the difficulty. You cited someone who was saying one needs to look at one community and broaden the picture. But there still seems to be a problem if you have a sort of situation where the whole human race is, say, believes in slavery at some moment in history, and then one bright spark says, I'm not so sure about slavery, I think maybe it's got a go. How that ever gets off the ground, where's that person going to get the notion? It's important he's having to say, well, actually, he's done a utilitarian calculation, or something like that, and so there's some other theory is underpinning, but once the system's up and running, virtue theory is nice, but how it ever quite gets off the ground, it's a sort of enlightenment type question I'm asking. Is it just too conservative because you're always tied into the virtues that are up and running at the moment?
Well, I think virtues would evolve depending on the communities.
I really think you're sort of maverick individuals within a community. Yeah. What's the position of them?
Well, they'd be the loners, I think, who would find it very difficult. I mean, I think the virtues of it are habits, things that you want to happen, the things that you desire. If you have a view which is not in accordance with the virtues, then you would have great difficulty with thinking virtues can be used.
I'm trying to think what I can make of the punk rocker who got onto my train yesterday. He seems to be operating on such a different value system. By the end of the journey, I sort of adjusted.
I think could be a valid objection to virtue ethics, but there's no guarantees. I don't think ethics is across the board, cut and dry. It's not like that, is it? We have to live with others, and we have to show kindness to that person. We have to allow for their destruction of toleration. Is that the point? Is what do we do? It's coming back to us. It's not really about them. It's about you and about your attitude to that punk rock. That's your problem. That's what you have to address.
No, the gentleman behind you. With the beard and the glasses? Oh, I thought you put up your hand. Right, you sir.
I guess it's kind of hard to be against virtue because I guess we all believe in virtue, but I'm deeply suspicious of Aristotle, who was a very conservative individual. He was anti-democratic. He believed in slavery and natural-born slaves and all the rest of it. So I wouldn't take a lesson from him on what virtue was. And I don't think you acquire virtue from complying with whatever society you happen to be born into. Actually, I think Kant, although he failed in almost all of his attempts, and I think when we were talking about the categorical imperative, I think really we're saying he failed to come up with a real categorical imperative, but he did come up with something that was really important in the critique of practical reason, and that was goodwill. he said we can never really know the implications of what we do. We can't understand all the consequences, but we can determine whether we behave with goodwill. Yeah. And I think my virtue, the virtue that I would be interested in, is essentially goodwill. Mm-hmm. All the rest about whether you put that goodwill to good use is a function of wisdom and understanding of the practical consequences and so forth. That's about being open to, I mean, to learning. But the fundamental virtuous act, the moral act, is to have an attitude of goodwill.
Yes, I agree with that. I don't think that's conscious at this point at all. Only if you're kind.
No, I'm not sure Aristotle had such goodwill towards slaves.
Well, yeah, certainly, I mean, he thought women were sort of second-class citizens. So, yeah, I mean, we are interpreting them in a contemporary light. I'm not suggesting that we go back to Aristotle in the human ethics. But isn't goodwill exactly the same as kindness, honesty, generosity? Isn't that goodwill?
I think goodwill is a genuine openness to the entire well-being that the word of the other individuals. It doesn't. It is completely incompatible with notions of gross inequality and slavery. Aristotle didn't understand that. And that's not acceptable. That is a fault, if you like, in his thinking. But goodwill would be much more embracing of other people's will.
But I think, although that's a fault in his thinking, as it was then, I don't think it's a fault in his basic argument. I don't think that affects his basic argument, which is still, I think, not really valid.
I think we must go on. Thanks, Brenda. It's just I've got three or four left. You, sir.
If I understand it correctly, the virtue ethics depends very heavily on intuition. And I often see intuition as actually just being quite a lot of rational thought where you don't show the working. That's something which goes on in your head, and if you're able to do that calculation, all in one piece, that you get an answer. But my concern is that when the going gets tough, does the virtue ethicist have to revert to Kant and Mill for the really difficult?
Not at all. I think the virtue ethicist does not need to revert to Kant and Mill. I think the habitual use of the virtue with practical wisdom. This goes over a very long period of time. It's not, a teenager doesn't have this. It's a long period of habit and knowing how things work, understanding people, being with people, being intuitive, yes, about how they feel. I think you're right in that sense. But it's very much a reason thing as well. It's active thinking. It's not just you intuitively know how you should treat that person. It's more a reasoned approach. It's the right circumstances at the right time, in the right place, in the right situation. It's that doctrine of the meaning that's so important to Aristotle's theory.
I would love to hear more about that, because that was very certainly the question I had. But that, I'm afraid, cuts off three people I had waiting. But time is up. Brenda, thank you very much. That was very clear.